Hello and welcome to another episode of The Advantage. I am your host, Michael Fiddle. Today is Monday, April 15th, and on today's episode, we are reviewing some of the hottest topics around the NBA. We are going to get ready for playoff basketball. We are going to do some season in review stuff. We have Team USA rosters announced just a few minutes ago. So I told my guests not to look so that we could go through and take some guesses about who are the 11 named guys to Team USA already. And then we have a few gambling topics to cover. Of course, this is a gambling podcast. And some of you may know that I released an episode last week called 5 Tips for NBA Playoff Betting. Now, I want to start this episode off by mentioning a 6th tip that I recommend if you plan to bet the NBA playoffs. And that is generally to reduce your exposure and to lessen your bet size. Now, it seems counterintuitive to when the games are most important to actually reduce your bet size. I personally want to emphasize that there is no correlation to an important game for Jason Tatum and an important bet for my bankroll. Just because the games count more in real life and just because we are soon to get to the offseason where we are going to have more limited gambling opportunities doesn't mean that we need to make bigger bets. In fact, the reason why we actually go the other way and start to reduce our bet size is because we are running into a sharper market where we latch on to less of the trends and indicators that we played into all regular season long. So, for example, there is rarely ever going to be a rest disparity between teams because as seasons go along or as series go along, they're going to end their previous game at the exact same time. There is going to be no travel disparity between these series. Rest and travel become absolutely neutralized unless you're picking off a game one situation where maybe a previous series went 7 and another team was resting. But we find less of these scenarios. We get more consensus markets because there are less games. The books can more sharply pay attention to the ones that they do have to price. And because they are the same games over and over again, we reach a consensus and sharp number in the market. So you will not see, or you probably will not see, I will still be looking for them, but I do not expect to get to a situation where I can play a token Fiddle's Middle where I notice 3 points of line movement live on the board and I could play the numbers against each other. That's probably not going to happen. A 3-unit max bet is probably not going to happen because I don't anticipate getting multiple points of line movement in my direction, tacking on tons of CLV, and having a huge plus EV ticket. These are flatter markets. There are still going to be great reads and lots of bets to place. We will cover all of that and more. But just buyer beware, as we go through these NBA playoffs, we're actually going to scale back our unit size or average bet size. I'll mark it as betting 3/4 of a unit instead of a full unit. All of that and more on this episode of The Advantage. Let's get it popping.
I'm the type to get shit done. You the type to observe. March Madness on my speakers, but today's November 23rd. Cause I'm loud in the blunt, yeah. I do and say what I want, yeah. Probably somewhere sunny in 10. Foreign women in the sun, yeah.
That's all that I need. That's all that I need. That's all that I need. Got my brothers with me. Got my brothers with me and my mama's healthy. That's all that I need.
All right, before we officially get started, let me remind everyone to rate, review, subscribe on whatever podcast platform you are listening to this episode, to sign up for the fiddlespicks.substack.com free gambling newsletter. If you like what we talk about, you might like what we write about, fiddlespicks.substack.com, and to check out the Fantasy Basketball International. You probably don't need any fantasy resources about now, but they have some great stuff, and rankings for next year are soon to come out. Alec, I'm going to throw it to you first. Welcome in, my man. We are joined by Alec and Gibby, two regulars on the pod. We should get to know them. I don't really suspect anyone are new faces for you guys. So let's jump right into it. Just kind of your thoughts on reducing your betting exposure as we get into the NBA playoffs.
For sure. Glad to be here, Mike. I mean, it's been a fantastic, if you've been following along, it's been a fantastic year for us. No real need to force anything now and start betting like we weren't all year. I mean, mainly as you were saying, it's a more concentrated market. It's sharper. There's a whole sample size of data. And it relates to a great point you made last week that you dropped just about it being a bigger stage. Just because the players care more doesn't mean that we necessarily have to as bettors.
Yeah, I just kind of want to emphasize that one more time. Just because this game means a hell of a lot more to Jason Tatum's legacy does not mean it means a lot more to our bankroll. Gib, I want to transition over to you because we're going to talk about some of the hottest topics in the league. And right now, every NBA show, every podcast talking about basketball is covering a few different stories. You were a high-level basketball player. You are related to some Hall of Fame basketball players. You have been in locker rooms a lot more than the rest of us on the screen. So I want to ask you to start off, how much does it actually matter that the New York Knicks went and like established winning culture and went and took the two seed and decided to play for the last game when it didn't really mean much, and they still played Jalen Brunson 40 minutes and into overtime, and DiVincenzo played a ton? And then on the flip side of that, how much does it actually matter that the Cavaliers put in the scrubs and seem to duck down to the fourth and fifth seed and seem to display a losing culture? Are those things real?
I've been thinking about this, and as a competitor and someone who's played, that switch to be able to switch on and off whether or not something can matter to high intensity is really hard to turn on and off. If you're in a locker room where shit doesn't matter, or you're playing somewhere where something doesn't matter, or you feel like it doesn't matter, it's really hard to switch it back on. Now, I'll say there are exceptions to this rule, mainly Miami, but being able to switch on that switch or turn it off is, as I said before, really, really difficult. So I think it's really important. I actually think the Knicks playing DiVincenzo 50 plus minutes in a game recently, and really going for the 50 wins is huge for a mindset, because if you are in that mindset and you stay in that mindset, you're going to be able to like keep that going. So that's why, you know, I'm obviously a Knicks fan. It might be a little biased. I'm really pro Knicks right now. Like getting that two seed, accomplishing that, getting that and staying there, I think is huge. And the Cavs, you know, I've been kind of down on them all season, but seeing them kind of like crumble towards the end of the season and seemingly not care, I don't like what it's going to do for their mindset in games, because I don't know if they have the experience or the players or the leadership within the locker room to be able to make that switch, because it's a hard switch to turn on at the right, when you want to turn it on and at the right time.
Alec, you're like, we've established on the show that you're one of the biggest Knicks fans that I know. You had a different take than Gibby, saying you actually wish they ducked it and played down for the seeding and didn't go for the win and grab the two seed. From a fan perspective, just talk me through what you were thinking and your rationale for it.
Yeah, for sure. I would say that was my gut reaction. I was like, why are we doing this? I mean, also just knowing who Tibbs is, the approach, he has one gear, and that's just win, 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 no matter the stakes of the game. So I knew that's what was going to happen. And as I said, yeah, my initial reaction was like, why put us in this situation to play Philly or Miami in round one versus Indiana? But I tried to start challenging my thoughts, and I like what Gibby said. I think it's a real thing to sort of, you know, take that morale and that team chemistry with you, carry the momentum. And also it relates to something what Gibby said about the Cavs that I think we'll touch on later when we discuss some of the first round playoff matchups.
Yeah, I want to actually, Gib, I want to throw this back to you, because now this is getting my mind rolling.
Yeah.
If we do think, because I actually thought you were going to go the other way. I thought you were going to say it's all Monday morning quarterback sports talk, first take, bullshit, doesn't matter. I have two different opinions. One, everyone calling the Cavaliers soft right now is bulletin board material for the Cavaliers to come out really tough. So although they just did something seemingly weak by playing Imani Bates and Larry Nance's brother, and they had four centers out there with a 6'9" point guard in Imani Bates, I actually don't think that matters at all, because I think everyone's now talking shit on the Cavaliers, and they're going to come out with a fire and an intensity that is similar to what we're going to see from the Knicks, because they went and got it and they're a winning culture. So I actually thought you were going to go the other way and say it's kind of meaningless and it doesn't matter. But my question to you is, if it does matter, right? Let's actually think now it does matter. I'm looking at the other play-in game of Bulls versus Hawks. And Bulls were in that game with the New York Knicks, playing DeRozan 40 minutes into overtime in a meaningless game, playing Caruso till the wire. Meanwhile, the Atlanta Hawks are benching DeJounte Murray, playing Trae Young to get him a few minutes back, losing to the Charlotte Hornets with a discombobulated roster, just knowing that they're locked into the 10 seed. Does Chicago going for it no matter what, even though they were locked into the 9 and it was a meaningless game, make you want to back them because of their culture and their intensity against the Atlanta Hawks, who are kind of throwing games and not giving a shit down the end of the season?
100%. 100%. I was really impressed with the Bulls in that game because they weren't really fighting for anything. It was just like they're playing in a game to continue what they're playing. I was kind of shocked by it. Billy Donovan kind of wants to set this, you know, set the standard of, we're going to go hard every game. We're going to try every game. And so I'm heavy, you know, I don't know if we're going to get into this later, but like the Bulls in that game, I'm heavy backing. I don't love the Hawks, you know, packing it in. And you know, something you mentioned with the Cavs, I want to touch on this, it's slightly different, but you said bulletin board material. The Cavs got clapped by the Knicks last year. Clapped.
Yeah, I think it's a much different team. Let's address this, but go ahead.
They got clapped by the Knicks. Who's the big dude on the Knicks? Why am I playing?
Mitchell Robinson.
Mitchell Robinson. He looked like Wilt Chamberlain out there. Mitch looked like he looked like an all NBA guy out there. You can't have last year you guys get embarrassed by the Knicks, and then also at the end of the season be like, we're gonna pack it in because this doesn't matter. You can't have both of those things. I you can use bulletin board material all you want, but both of those things are telling me, you know, bet against the Cavs because there's something about what they're doing right now that's losing behavior.
Okay, let me try and counter that, and then we'll throw Alec for the – Alec's going to be our Tony Reale right now, giving points to who had the better take as we duke this out, Gib. The reason why I'm actually buying the Cavaliers this season, and I'm actually don't think last season's any big deal at all or any indication for what's going to happen this year. If we look back to the team that was the Cavaliers last season, one, a lot of inexperience. Now they get a little experience, that's not really a big thing. They were using Isaac Okoro as a floor spacer and got rid of Kevin Love, and they needed floor spacing and rebounding. And the Knicks had brought in Josh Hart at last year's trade deadline, and he was supposed to shadow Isaac Okoro but also crash the glass because they didn't have to really respect Okoro's three-point making to have a proficient five-man offense out there. So they were able to just lean off of Okoro and dominate the glass because obviously Josh Hart is an incredible rebounder. So I actually think we look at this Cavaliers team and the fact that they have Max Strus starting, who's a great shooter and a good defender. They have Bang Bang Niang, who's a floor spacer in that Kevin Love role. And they have Caris LeVert, who actually played with like a redeemed sense of confidence and made us run for sixth man of the year. So I think this Cavaliers team on the edges is much different. And I think you get a much stronger effort out of them because they got bullied last year. Jared Allen, I think he used the term out physical. There was a weird terminology, but it rang true. And I don't think that's going to happen again because he spoke it into existence last year. So I expect them to be tougher and I expect the roster to be better. So I actually am personally ready to back the Cavaliers. Alec, how do you feel about that series? Who's more right, me or Gib?
In the theoretical Knicks-Cavs, or
just Cavaliers as we get. One of our topics for today was, I guess, team that you're ready to fade once the playoffs start. It seems like Gibby's taking that and running with it, going to be Cavaliers, right? So let's just address this from the start. How do you feel about fading the Cavaliers versus me saying you actually can buy them in the first round?
So I was thinking about this in terms of a potential throwaway series. Actually, I was thinking Magic Cavs, so I am more with Gibby there. Although I will say, I do like your points about the reconstructed roster. I think it makes a lot of sense. They needed that floor spacing and that rebounding. I think the biggest problem is their biggest player, the biggest star in the team, has one foot out the door. It's the worst kept secret in the league that he's probably going to ask for a trade. So I think two things are true. While they do have a better roster than last year when they got clapped by the Knicks, the Donovan Mitchell thing is just, I think, sucked the life out of the team. It's done something. It's had some sort of impact. So I think ultimately, I think that's why the Cavs are in this, like, showing this like losing way, the malaise they're in. And I think the Magic, I like them in round one.
Wow. Okay. So I'll be solo dolo on the Cavaliers in this group chat, but give me the Cavs. I am not playing anything on them yet. I am waiting and watching. I probably want the Cavaliers -4 in game one. However, that total is coming down from 208.5. I think it's down to 207.5 right now. I already played the under at 207.5 in that game for, I think, 0.75 units, small plays. We are reducing our exposure in the NBA playoffs. Would you look at that? We spoke it into truth. I like the Cavaliers. I have not played it yet. I am waiting and watching the market, but I think I'm going to be backing them. Let's talk about a few other gambling topics and then we'll segue into some of the other things that we had planned. Gib, news is coming out that Giannis actually closer to questionable, doubtful even for game one. How much bullshit is that? And how much should we be buying that the Bucks are now down to a -1.5 from that open of -4? There's been some Pacers steam in the series price, in the matchup. There's been a lot of people saying, hey, we actually like the Pacers in this series. Plus the Giannis injury, now we get doubtful. So add on another layer of movement towards the Pacers. For me, Giannis is a superhero. He is the Incredible Hulk. He is Iron Man. He is Thor. He is all of them. He's got Wolverine super healing. He's, you know, the best body in the NBA. Pause. Are we backing Giannis -1.5 already, or are we waiting for more news? Like, how concerned are we? How much are we thinking this line movement's a bluff?
The concern is high. As high, on a scale of 1 to 10, it's a 10.
Really?
I think this for a few reasons. I don't know if you know this, but last year, Giannis hurt his knee.
Yep.
And what happened? They got blown out by the Heat. They got clapped by the Heat.
He missed multiple games in that series. I want to add on to that. He missed game four, once they were already down 2-0 in Miami. And universally, we all expected Giannis to come back and play. The line movement started to expect Giannis to come back and play. He ended up not coming back and playing that game. They ended up going down again. He came back later in the series, back at home. They ended up losing outright, I think, 4-1 in that series. But they lost Giannis, and he ended up not playing in multiple games because of the injury. So a little bit of water on what I said, that he's always going to play.
And here's the thing. So he hurt his knee last year. I think it was a hyperextended. Maybe it was a hyperextended. I can't remember the injury. But he hurt his calf, right? He strained his calf or whatever the injury is, something with the calf. Those injuries are way trickier and way harder to come back from. Because
soft tissue.
Yeah, I mean, every single person who, you know, you listen to is talking about the KD injury, and like, it was the same thing. It was a calf issue at first, and then it turned into an Achilles tear. And like, that's, you know, so the Bucks, one, they're not going to rush him back. You're not going to rush somebody back who, if you do, there's a chance that your superstar, your franchise could be out for 12 months. They're not going to do that. So they're going to make sure he's at 100%. And I agree with my man Matt over here. He commented, concern is high. Concern is real high with his injury. And so like that 1.5, are we riding with that? I don't know. Like, I'm also not a big believer in the Pacers. It's less about the Pacers. It's more about Giannis's injury to me.
Right. Because Pacers probably, if Giannis ends up being out for that game, line swings to Pacers minus two, even though they're the road team. So there is more movement for that to go in either direction. It should be about timing it appropriately. I will be plugged in to beat writers in Milwaukee, to interviews, to Doc Rivers coming out of that. But that game is not until Sunday, April 22nd. So we still have a full 6 days until that tips off. Obviously, again, give mention, this is a soft tissue injury. This is a muscle injury. This is a recurring. It's not like a bone bruise, or it's not like a kind of unstable joint. This is something that can flare up if there's a wrong movement here or there, and it could throw everything off. So we are walking on thin ice here. One other gambling topic that I want to hit, and then we're going to start generalizing the NBA. And that's hedging situations for the NBA playoffs. Now, I spoke on the five tips for NBA playoff betting. Let me plug that again. I did a five tips for NBA playoff betting. Number one was what not to do. Number two was an approach to series betting. Number three was betting systems that you can back. Number four was understanding how the key number scale starts to change. And number five was long shots that you could start to target. Within that, I talked about number two, series pricing, and my main thought was not to pre-plan to hedge series prices against one another. So guys, what I mean by that, you guys already know, but also for the audience, is we're not betting who's an underdog in a series. We're not betting the underdog in the series in games one and two. We're not betting Magic in games one and in the series before it tips off, with the sole intention of hoping they split and then being able to bet the other side to lock in profit. If that's your approach, there are better ways to go about taking that route and thinking, okay, the Magic might split 1-1. There are better ways to play a plus points, a just money line, roll it over, but you don't want to, or play the series price without a pre-plan to hedge it from the jump. We have gotten to a place, guys, where I actually am now have to consider hedging some of my NBA title tickets, where this isn't pre-planning a hedge based on a series price. This is I bet an NBA future in the past, and now we get to the playoffs where it's round one, and I need to consider hedging it. So I'm going to explain to you my situations, and I'm going to get your feedback on whether or not you should hedge this ticket or not. I have Indiana Pacers, we'll stay right with this one, 500-1 to win the NBA Finals. I'll repeat that. Fellas, I have the Indiana Pacers 500-1 to win the NBA Finals, placed on June 16th of last year, about 2 days after the Nuggets beat the Heat, when I grabbed the Houston Rockets and Indiana Pacers, thinking they would both be buyers this offseason. And sure enough, those were two risers in the standings. I was able to hedge off of Houston to make the playoffs with a Houston to not make the playoffs late in the season when they had that surge. But now I have Indiana Pacers 500-1. Gib, throwing it to you first. My current plan is to not hedge that ticket at all against the Milwaukee Bucks, because I do plan to play the Milwaukee Bucks, like we just spoke about, in a game-to-game setting. So if I am backing the Milwaukee Bucks in game one and I win a unit, then I've covered my whole exposure on that Indiana Pacers future. Do you agree or disagree with not playing any Bucks series price and going a game-by-game approach to that hedge?
No, I like the game-by-game approach. I think it's a wild ticket, 500-1, and Pacers to win the championship is a wild – it's a wild ticket. You got to really believe in Pascal Siakam to think that they're going to win.
I had a firm belief that they were going to bring in a guy like Pascal Siakam and make the playoffs. And when I placed the bet, Gib, there were no odds to make the playoffs. There were no win totals. There were no to come out of the East. Yeah. So it was only NBA title odds. Like when you bet Super Bowl the day after, there's only Super Bowl bets. So there was only NBA titles. And I said, by the time win totals and playoff odds and all that stuff become available, this is going to have caught up to the market where that's going to be priced as if it should be 120 to 1. So if I could pick off the 500 to 1 now, I'll do that with a plan of hedging. So yeah, I think the plan is to not hedge Indiana Pacers with Buck series.
No, I like that. And I think that, you know, it gets to an interesting question of like in NBA playoffs, in basketball playoffs, betting game to game rather than betting series. Like, who do you think is going to win this series versus the game to game? I don't know. You're more the pro on this betting stuff of like series versus game. But to me that approach seems like the right one. But I'm not sure. I would throw that actually back to you. Whether is it series by series that you bet either I'm going to bet the whole series or I'm going to bet game to game.
Yeah, I'll address that. I'm going to try and hedge title tickets with series. I would try and hedge series with games. I would try and hedge games with live lines. And so it's kind of a trickle down. So I actually think the best way to approach this is to bet, like, if you have a title ticket, then you're looking at the series price. That's your first level of evaluation. Okay, Pacers already taking steam. I'm not going to get a good number if I enter the market now. Plus, they kind of have some upside. They're kind of the sharp side in the market. Let me let that ticket ride a little bit and play Bucks in a game at a -1 or -1.5 in game one at home. That's great. And if the Pacers end up taking that, it puts that 500 to one ticket in a phenomenal spot where then I could just assume my risk on it was 2 units. So if I ever go back to hedge it later on another series, I could assume, okay, it was 1 unit plus the 1 unit lost on betting the Bucks, which is baked into this, and I want to hedge off that for 2 units. So definitely consider scaling or like trickling down with hedges, but also consider total exposure. So if you hedge something in round one, you need to consider that part of your lost wages in what you would lose if the futures bet lost in round two. So you're tacking on. Now you have 2 units of exposure, even if you only have 1 unit on that futures price at +500 or whatever. Alec, I'm going to throw another one to you. I have the Phoenix Suns 25 to 1 for 2 units. I saw them hanging on in that play-in tournament. I thought, that's a playoff team, not a play-in team. I was right. They climbed out of the play-in tournament, grabbed the 6th seed. Bradley Steele looking like a good defender and making his shots. First of all, I came up with that. Everyone call him Bradley Beal. Bradley Steele out there playing some phenomenal defense. They opened as fucking favorites versus Minnesota. The 6th seed as the favorite against the 3 seed with a chance of being the 1 seed going into the night. Gibby, first off, I'm going to throw it to you quickly. Did you even know the Suns were favored? Just quick, yes or no?
No, but I'm not shocked.
Okay, Alec, back to you. Now that I get the Minnesota Timberwolves as an underdog, I mean, they're -102. So technically with implied probability, they're a slight favorite. However, not slight favorite. They're still priced as an underdog, but you're still paying a more than 50% chance to win as your implied probability. Hopefully that's not too convoluted and confusing. I'm immediately buying in and grabbing some Timberwolves because I'm like, okay, if I have 25 to one upside on that ticket and in the first round, I can already grab like -102 exposure. My immediate thought was, hedge off of that in a series approach. I don't really know how I want to play that game by game, but my only hedge is to cover my expenses on my son's ticket. I will not win any money. I will only cancel out my ticket. So I am keeping all of that tilted towards the Suns.
Is that a Suns title ticket, the 25 to 1?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, so you're going to play them game one, the Timberwolves, or the series?
I'm going to play the series for Timberwolves price, and I'm not going to, I haven't touched anything for game one yet, but my plan is like, okay, I'm getting such a good price on the series and I don't really have an anticipation for how I want to play this for a game. So let me play the series price, cover my losses and keep myself exposed towards hopefully the Suns continue and move on.
Yeah. Like Gibby said, I'm not too shocked that, about the series price either. I think it's pretty evenly priced, and the wrinkle is Cat returning too.
Yep.
He's barely was played, what, a couple games down the regular season, and now it's they were playing a different with a different team for the last month and a half. So,
all right. So what we're doing is hedging game to game with the Indiana Pacers, hedging with a series approach with the Minnesota Timberwolves and Phoenix Suns ticket. Guys, if you have these kind of questions, feel free to either drop them in the chat. If you're on the YouTube channel on Fantasy Basketball International, you can enter things in the chat, like some guy Metalhead just asked us if the Lawnmower 5.0 is good. I don't know. Maybe. But you can come in and ask us a question if you, with your ticket, and we could work through it. Or you could reach out to me on Twitter. Let me know. I have 76ers 30-1. I have Miami Heat 35-1. And we could start to work through your head situation. So please reach out or consider these things. We are going to segue over, guys, into some reflections on the season thus far. It was a phenomenal 2023-24 NBA season. We saw the play-in tournament, in-season tournament come into existence. We've seen one of the great rookie classes. We've seen the player participation policy take some hold and do some good things. We're getting some star players out there. Let's start reviewing some of these things. And the first thing that I asked you guys is say something nice about a team that's going to Cancun. So we got 14 lottery teams already. We know who they are. You could choose a back end play-in team if you think they're not going to make it. You want to say something nice about them. But say something nice about a team that we are not going to watch for the rest of the season. I'll throw it to you first, Alec.
I'm going to go with the Charlotte Hornets.
Ooh.
Big caveat, they need LaMelo Ball to stay healthy. But the Brandon Miller was awesome for them, especially down the stretch. I think thinking along lines of you with the Pacers ticket that, and who was the other one? Was it not Pacers?
Rockets.
And Rockets. There'll probably be buyers in the offseason, I would think, especially like hopefully getting LaMelo fully healthy. He played, I had him in my fantasy team, maybe he played like 20 games this year. He barely, and they just kept him out the rest of the season. So Brandon Miller, rookie season done, hopefully healthy LaMelo. I think they're going to be buyers and potentially be more exciting next year.
Gibby, any quick thoughts on the Hornets? Because I got some thoughts on Hornets. You don't have to have thoughts on Hornets.
My thoughts are similar to Alec. I'm really excited about Brandon Miller. I think watching him play, being a guy who I bet on frequently in my player props, therefore I watch him a lot. He's going to be good, man. He's the fucking real deal. Getting LaMelo healthy, Bridges coming back. It's the first time I've ever been like, wow, the Hornets might be a little exciting. There's something there.
This conversation is exciting to me too. Gib, let me ask you a question. Percentage chance, 1 to 100, that Brandon Miller still ends up being better than Scoot Henderson in their career. Where would you put that odds?
99.5.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. That was a debate this offseason. It should no longer ever be a debate ever again. The same way that I tried to prop up the Jabari Smith and Paolo debate that I'm going to have to throw out in the trash. We're going to have to throw out in the trash. What's up, brother? We're going to have to throw out in the trash the Brandon Miller versus Scoot. I want to comment Hornets too. Guys, just like Rockets and Pacers, they're a team that I'm betting hopefully at 500-1 instantly. And there's a few things that you guys are missing that are not being spoken about. One, brand new ownership and an influx of cash coming, new practice facility, new everything. Two, brand new coach coming this offseason. Hopefully they bring in someone with experience. They've been linked to guys like Kevin Young, assistant for the Suns, who would be a new coach. They've been linked to guys like Mike Budenholzer, who's won an NBA championship. So let's see who the Hornets bring in. Three, you have an impending high lottery pick. Now let's see if they use that pick, or let's see if they use that pick in a trade. I think they are going to be primed to trade it. Miles Bridges is going to be a question mark of the offseason. The Hornets have kind of been speaking into existence that they are going to get rid of him. However, things have looked different the last few months. Things have looked different since we heard those rumors around the trade deadline, around contract extension time, when that, you know, there's like a deadline that you have to meet where you cannot sign them for the rest of the season. That's why Jalen Brunson's now a Knick, because the Mavericks ran out of time being able to give him that contract that he said he was going to sign. So Miles Bridges has been linked to not coming back to the Hornets, and they did not offer him a contract extension. And now we're getting to, well, he might actually be back. And if Miles Bridges is back, and if Brandon Miller is back, and if LaMelo Ball is back, bless you, Alec, I want to say, and I know this is weird as fuck, but I want to say it. You can actually pair. I'm going to be the only person that's knows this shit. You could pair their horoscopes, their astrological alignments, and they, what energetically, are born on dates that correlate with a high efficiency of chemistry and cohesion in work environments. I think their play styles really translate. So the stars are literally aligning. The moon is in the right spot in the atmosphere. The eclipse has happened for Ball, Bridges, and Brandon Miller to actually be a dominant threesome in the NBA. Caveat, they might add someone this offseason via trade. They might upgrade their coaching staff. It might all come together for this Charlotte Hornets team. Alec, love that one. Love it, love it, love it. Gib, give me your team that you want to say something nice about as they're in Cancun.
I had two teams that I was going back and forth, but I think I'm going to go with the obvious one. It's the Spurs.
Yeah. Yep.
Congrats.
Glad someone took it.
Like, congrats, man. He's better than advertised. Wemby is a freak. And the way he played the last 15 games, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's insane. He is the most exciting player to come into the league, maybe since KD.
Guys, pause the show. Someone appreciates my horoscopes.
Yeah,
I have never heard that, and I'm cackling. Thank you, Caitlin. I appreciate you. Gibby, continue talking about the Wemby Spurs. Let me ask you. We know he's been amazing, and we know he's been phenomenal. Who do we think it's Donovan Mitchell? Because you were the one saying earlier this pod that Donovan Mitchell's about to request a trade. Do we think it comes this offseason? Do we think there's any pieces there that are good already? Do they tank and potentially get a Cooper Flagg situation? Like, what the fuck's happening with the future of this Spurs team?
No, I think it's the light skinned boy down in Atlanta. I think Trae Young is the fit. He think about that duo, right? Wemby can make up for all of Trae's, you know, deficiencies on defense. That's how good he is on defense. Trae is so good on offense. He can unlock a version of Wemby we've never seen, and we may have never seen in the league before. Wemby is that good. I think he said 15%. I think that might be a little bit exaggerated of like what his full potential is. But he is a talent like we haven't really seen at that size. And you pair him with Trae, who's an incredible passer and an incredible threat on offense, that they can't just like focus on the 7'5" alien in the paint all the time. And I also think Atlanta's a little sick of Trae. And so I think there's a way. I don't know what it is. I don't know what that trade is. Maybe you get back the first rounders that they gave up.
I was about to say they already own the other team's first round picks.
Maybe you get back those first rounders, and then Trae's in that, and then now you finally got a point guard. Because I like the other pieces. I might be alone in this. You know, I like Vassell. You know, I actually like Trae Jones too. But they have good
as a backup.
As a backup point guard, he's good. And I think they have pieces. You get a point guard in there who controls the game. You got a big guy who can absolutely transform basketball, which is the highest compliment I can give somebody.
So, Gabe, you've been on this show before, and we've been cracking up about it in our conversations. The whole Devin Vassell is untradeable because he's a prime partner for Wemby. We've laughed at that nonsense. Is Devin Vassell included in the Trae Young trade, or is he untouchable in a Trae Young deal?
I don't know. I'm not, you know, I don't know these GM talks. I would say, who cares? Like, give him up. If you can get Trae Young, if you can get Trae Young with Vassell and two first rounders, you have to pull the trigger there. You have to. He's playing with, who's the guy with the crazy hair and shoots foul shots?
Sohan
is his point guard.
Don't mess with the Sohan.
Are we kidding here? Sohan's good. I like Sohan. He's the point guard. It's like putting Dennis Rodman at point guard. It doesn't make sense. He's catching lobs.
This segment was say something nice. Jeez.
No, it is nice. It's so nice about Wemby. Yeah. It's like, put something there. Anything. Your offseason is literally your oyster. You can do it. People want to come to San Antonio to go play with him.
Yep. No, I think that's going to be very telling, too. Who wants to come run with Wemby and the Spurs in the next few years? Going to be very interesting. One of the offseason plot lines I'm absolutely most fascinated. And I actually think this is going to come back in a Team USA conversation in a few minutes. I want to say something nice about the Memphis Grizzlies. Now, I'm not wearing my Grizzlies tee. I'll wear it next time. Y'all know I fucking love Ja Morant. Call 12, baby. He is the fucking man. I also just want to reemphasize how good their cap sheet is this offseason and how they should re-enter next season healthy, energized, with a great coach in Taylor Jenkins, with a high lottery pick controlling all of their future picks, and with the cap space this summer to add somebody. Why do they have the cap space this summer to add somebody? One, because Ja Morant didn't get all NBA because he was suspended. So he is negated from that $8 million per year increase and a net of $40 million on his total contract value. So they saved money there. Two, Marcus Smart is on a descending deal. He is going to get paid sub $20 million for the next three seasons after this for the Memphis Grizzlies. Part three, that also applies to Tripp. Jaren Jackson Jr. is on a descending deal for the next 2 years. He is going to get paid less than $22 million. Grayson Allen just got a 4 for $70. That is going to be right on par with last year's Defensive Player of the Year, Jaren Jackson Jr. They know Desmond Bane's extension kicks in next season. So we have this offseason to bring in one more piece and then start to exceed the cap and use bird rights to re-sign everybody. They have a top maybe five pick. They can use that as trade bait. They can use future picks. They are going to try and get in on the Mikal Bridges sweepstakes if that becomes available. They are going to try and get in on a lot of the names that become available. Don't be surprised if they even throw their hat in the Paul George race. They are going to try and bring in a wing. And if they do that, and if we could pick off Grizzlies 80-1, like the Pelicans were at the start of the season, Grizzlies 60-1 to win the title right when this NBA season ends, I will be investing in a little bit in that. So Charlotte Hornets, San Antonio Spurs, Memphis Grizzlies are the three teams that we say something nice about as they're all on their yacht parties in Cancun. Guys, those were the exact three teams that I wanted to hit. So well done by us. I did not know who you were going to say. And I also don't know.
I think the Rockets are an obvious candidate, too.
Rockets were my second team. Rockets were my second team.
So I actually thought the Spurs and the Rockets were the two most obvious choices, and I didn't want to pick them just because I thought there was I just thought it was more straightforward, and the Charlottes were a little bit more of a fun one. But, yeah, I mean, Ime, he had them playing a young team, young, talented team playing really well down the stretch.
And Jalen Green is he's now a real
real threat.
Like a real threat, real asset. He's good. He's good.
He was scoring 25 points on any given night whenever he wanted to. I know it was in a losing effort, but like you get a guy who's 22 years old who's able to put up 25 and jump through the gym. Like that guy can develop into a Jaylen Brown-esque. Like it could go Swaggy P. Nick Young, but it could go, you know, Jaylen Brown type. So I was always saying, like, hold the phone on throwing water on the Jaylen Green stuff. So, all right, next topic that I want to hit is give me a stat this season that spoke volumes to you. When you heard this stat, you said, wow, that's a really telling stat. Gib, kick us off.
I had three, but I'll pick the one that stood out the most to me. And we just mentioned his name, or you did, Fid. Grayson Allen, 46% from 3-point line.
Yeah.
That's a fucking great stat.
46% from three. And not like he's shooting like two a game. I don't know what the numbers is, but he's shooting over like six a game.
Over six a game is the numbers.
Contract he got, well deserved. Watching him play, you're like, wow, he not only can he shoot the three that well, he does a lot of things on the court. He's not Steve Novak. He can't just like sit in the corner and be like the biggest 3-point threat. He's athletic as hell. He's a decent defender. He's really, really good. But that 46% from three, when I saw that, I was like, that is one of the craziest stats I've seen. He leads the league in that. I was pumped for him. I was just like kind of as a Duke fan, I was very happy. Shout out to Kalen. Yeah, wild shooting season. Absolutely wild.
What were your other two stats, just so that we know what they were?
Okay, other two. One was Wemby's 3.6 blocks per game. 1.2 blocks a game higher than the second highest in the league.
That's a great one. Is that stats two and three?
No. But that it just puts that stat in perspective.
Yeah.
He was blocking nearly four a game, and no one else was blocking more than two.
Curry 4.8 3-pointers a game. The next closest one's like 4.1.
Yeah. And it's insane. And we all know that, like, you know, advanced statistics talk about how blocks are kind of overrated, but still that delta between him and Walker Kessler was second at 2.4 is insane. And it just goes to Wemby. And I don't think we have to touch on Wemby anymore and how great he is, but that's insane. And the last one I have, this isn't a single season stat. It's just where he's at now. 40,000, 11,000, and 11,000.
Bron.
We will never.
Somebody got a binky for baby Bron.
Nobody will ever, ever have 40, 10, and 10. Ever have that again. So just. He gets a lot of love in the. I don't think it is. It could be talked about enough how incredible 40, 10, even 10 and 10, 40, 10 and 10, and he has 11. They're mind boggling numbers. And I just wanted to put that in there because that is the third set I had that.
Yeah.
Shout out to Bron for doing this since Alec was born and
literally
since we were in third grade or second, whatever grade we were at, Finn, you know.
All right, I have the best screen to share right now and showing the fucking wildest stat that's correlated to this LeBron stats I've ever seen ever of any LeBron stat in the universe. When you think of LeBron's stat set, when you think, okay, what is he going to average this season? What is he going to get in a given game? Gib, what are the numbers that you use to describe, oh, LeBron's going to have bum, bum, bum tonight?
25, 7, and 7.
All right. I would go 27, 7, and 7 is like your classic LeBron-ism.
This season? Like, no. I'm talking about career.
Career.
Okay. Yeah, 27 makes more sense. But I was saying this season, 25, 7, and 7 is what I'm
talking about. Okay. I'm talking career. Look at this. LeBron James has never finished a single game in his career with a 27-7-7 stat line.
That's really funny. Yeah. That's really funny.
Isn't that fucking insane. Nuts?
That is insane. And so that it's going to be 8 rebounds.
My mind, guys.
That is insane. That is literally insane.
That's from March 5th. Wow.
Yeah, so maybe he's done it since March 5th, but holy shit. It's so crazy to me that literally everyone in the universe would say, oh, LeBron, 27-7-7. And yet he's never actually done it once in a single game. That one blew my mind. I have another one that is worth mentioning, but Alec, give us your season-long statistic that spoke volumes to you.
Quickly, before I give my stat, I wanted to say something related to what Gibby was saying. I was thinking about it when he brought the Spurs, actually, but never to Trump. I got it right back there, the Sports Illustrated. Pretty small, so that's my LeBron fanism, because that stat's incredible. But the reason I bring that up is because I don't think there is ever been, I think not that Wemby will get there, because I don't even want to start that, but there hasn't been someone who actually has a chance to exceed such high expectations like Wemby since LeBron. And it's I mean, I wasn't skeptical of him, but I'm just floored at how impactful he has been. And I think
What was your season stat?
So my season stat was Tommy Beer, Knicks reporter, tweeted this out earlier today. And I don't want to exaggerate what this means. I'm just the stat itself. They've played a similar amount of games. Most points scored in the NBA in 2024. Jalen Brunson, 1,384 points.
Number one.
Number two.
Whoa, wait, 1,300 points this season? No, he has 20.
In 2024, the year, the calendar year.
Okay, so since January 1st.
Since January 1st, yeah. Okay. Sorry, I read that wrong.
Wait, before you go, I want to say this is a actually relevant stat set. To use NBA stats from January 1st on when we get to NBA playoff basketball is a relevant stat set. Don't forget 2 years ago when we had the Celtics and the Warriors in the finals, and it was the Celtics who made that amazing January run with Ime and then continued it through the rest of the season. And the Mavericks had the second best defense in the entire NBA from January 1st on. And both of those teams made their respective conference finals, and then the Celtics lost to the Warriors in the NBA finals. So using a stat set that is from January 1st on is relevant. Tell us what it was.
So,
ooh, a screen share.
Yeah, here's the rest of the stat. So Luka was second with 1,353, and then highest plus minus in the count since January 1st. Brunson plus 481, Jokic plus 397.
Wow.
So it just shows how valuable he's been. Not to say he's on the level of either of those two players, but he's gotten way closer than any of us would have anticipated.
Yeah, Gib, you fucking love Jalen Brunson, so I'll let you respond to this. Thoughts on JB's season? Is he fifth in MVP ballot? Is he first all NBA?
I asked you this maybe a week ago or 2 weeks ago. I was like, is Jalen Brunson first team? And you were like, nah, he can't be.
Caitlin
says he has to be. He has to be
the best player in the East.
Definitely the best guard in the East.
There's Giannis, there's Embiid, there's Tatum. I still am a
slow
roller onto the Brunson train because I just don't. Every year comes playoffs and he proves me wrong. So we'll see. We'll see what it is.
What last playoffs he proved wrong? No, Jalen.
Every playoffs he proves me wrong. Gibby, me and you were roommates in the financial district of New York City when he was on Villanova, and I had the winning bracket. If it wasn't for that guy, what was the bigger guy's name on his team?
Chris Jenkins
made that half court shot and ruined my bracket and cost me thousands of dollars. So I've always been a slow roller onto the Brunson. Maybe it's a slow burn for me, but we'll have to see him get it done in one more playoffs before I get on the train that he's actually top five in even the Eastern Conference. For me, I'm talking Brunson versus Maxey, which I'm going to get to my stat right here, and then let's start talking about our last point. We got two more things to get through, and then we'll wrap up. My season-long stat was pretty simple. I wanted to reflect the player policy and the fact that we've gotten so many more games out of players, whether that be Zion, whether that be AD, whether that be kind of a bunch of pretty much everyone but Joel Embiid because he was actually injured, or John Morant. We got amazing player participation throughout the entire NBA. And I think the one that puts the nail on the coffin is Chet Holmgren, 82 games this season.
Wow. I was thinking about that one too.
Good for him.
Holmgren starts 82 after last season having a Liz Frank injury, missing the entire year after a summer league, and him being on the Oklahoma City Thunder, which are rest, recovery, play it slow, lack of urgency. And this that just speaks to not only player participation, but to how the culture in Oklahoma City has changed. So really proud of Chet, really happy to see him play a full 82. He's one of a few that played a full 82 this season. Buddy Hield played like 85 because he played 83 because of after the trade. And then he also played in the in-season tournament finals, which doesn't count as a game. And now he's going to play in the play-in game, which technically doesn't count as a game. We'll see if he ends up playing in two play-in games if the Sixers end up losing it. The last thing before we're getting out of here, guys, it's been a great show. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you to everyone watching. We have over 100 people right now. Fantastic. I wanted to do changing of the guard. And now I was hoping AV would be here for this discussion because in the very first podcast at the start of the season, I told AV this was going to be the last year before we change the guard this offseason. And we're saying Booker is better than Durant. And we're going to say so-and-so Tatum is better than LeBron. Now, I said this was the last year that we were going to still say Durant was better than Booker and LeBron is still better than Tatum. We're not going to get into that. Those, I feel, are both still true. We're not going to get into it. What I wanted to say is who is one for you guys where you feel a changing of the guard has happened? Who has passed who?
Who do you want to start?
You. Go for it. I don't care.
All right. I have two. And I'll start with one that's not exactly your question, but Jalen Brunson has overtaken Carmelo Anthony as the best Knick in the past 15 years.
100%. Wow. Okay.
That is not exactly what you were saying.
I want to work through these quick because I want to do Team USA stuff. What's number two, Gib?
I took SGA over Steph Curry.
Holy shit. Okay, Alec, changing of the guard. Who is
it? I agree with that. Those are the two players I was thinking of as well.
Wow.
Those weren't the same comparisons, but I was thinking, I think Brunson's the best guard in the East. Giannis and Tatum, I won't argue that, but best guard in the East, I feel comfortable saying that. And then SGA, behind Jokic and Luka, I don't really think I think he's probably the third best player, at least in the MVP discussion. You could easily put him third behind Luka and
Brunson,
and Shea.
Oh yeah, I agree. Shea will be three
or second, or even second.
Who did you have those two exactly for changing of the guard? No other comparison to add.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow, you guys didn't even talk about this, and you have the same one. I went a little bit safer. I used players that were talked about a lot in comparison with each other this offseason. And I just said 76ers should be very happy they did not acquire Damian Lillard and that they shipped James Harden out because Tyrese Maxey straight up better than Harden, better than Lillard. Keep it moving. Right?
Yep. Agreed.
I don't agree. But okay. Yeah, okay.
You think which one is still better than Maxey? Both?
I'd take Dame this year, but just all right, not hard.
We'll see it in the playoffs. The last thing I want to do, I keep saying the last thing, actually the last thing that we're doing, then we're getting out of here. Woj just tweeted about an hour ago 11 names that are going to be on Team USA. I have the list of names in front of me. Team USA has been a hot topic on Check Ball. Who are the 11 names? Let's switch off one and one on guesses. Let's try and knock them through. And then we have one question to add on top of that. Go ahead, Gibby. Give me one player who will be on Team USA this offseason.
I'm going to go with Steph Curry.
Correct. Alec.
LeBron James.
LeBron James. Gibby.
Go with the easy one because he changed his nationality for it. But I'm going to go with Joel Embiid.
So in respect of changing of the guard, it's correct. Embiid's on. In respect of changing the guard and in respect of all the Wemby discussion that we've had, was there any thinking that if he joined Team France, he wouldn't be the face of the international game and that it was actually Wemby's team and that it was a better look for Joel to join Team USA? Am I bugging or is that legit?
No.
All right, Alec, name a fourth player that is going to be on Team USA.
Kevin Durant.
Gibby, name a fifth player that is going to be on Team USA.
I'll stick with the Suns. I'll go with D-Book.
Durant and Booker. These are all on it. Alec, keep going. Who do you got?
Mr. Ant Edwards.
Mr. Ant Edwards is on Team USA. Gibby.
I'm going to go with Jay Tatum.
Jason Tatum is on Team USA. Go ahead, Alec. We have Stephen Curry, LeBron James, Joel Embiid, Durant, Booker, Ant, and Tatum. Let's keep going. There are 11. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of them down.
This is everyone. That's everyone I've guessed. The only person I didn't guess who I think is not going to be on the team is Jalen Brunson.
Jalen Brunson is not on the team. Gibby, right. Do you have another guess?
I do, because he's a Team USA staple. So I'm going to go with Drew Holiday on the side.
Correct. He was previously announced to be on Team USA. Let's throw it back to Alec. It might not be your favorite guard in the East, but there is another guard in the East who is on Team USA.
Dame?
Nope.
Tyrese Halliburton.
Tyrese Halliburton is on Team USA. Yeah. I understand it, but I don't think it should be as crystal clear as him being inserted into the top 11 so automatically. Again, I understand it because his start to the season, his previous summer in international basketball, and the fact that he has been a little injured through the second half, which has said, okay, and then that's maybe why his performance hasn't been so good. And then we're going upside. He can develop and he could be on this team for future years. Bothers me that that's not instantly considered to be a Ja Morant spot, to be honest, guys. Okay, we have two more players who are 100% confirmed to be on Team USA. They are both big men. Gibby, do you have any guesses?
I have Bam Adebayo as my guess.
Bam Adebayo is on Team USA. He is actually another staple because he could play so versatilely in the international game that he's a perfect fit. Alec, do you know who the last big man?
Is it a versatile big man that could potentially be considered a wing?
Perhaps.
Paolo Banchero?
Nope. I'm giving you a hint if you look on the screen.
Anthony Davis.
Ladies and gentlemen, I wasn't going to start putting pen on my face, but I just put the pen across my face to mimic a unibrow. And the unibrow Anthony Davis is on going to be on Team USA. So that means we have a culmination of Stephen Curry, LeBron James, Joel Embiid, Kevin Durant, Jason Tatum, Anthony Edwards, Tyrese Halliburton, Drew Holiday, Devin Booker, Bam Adebayo, and Anthony Davis with one more flyer remaining. Gibby, who gets the last spot?
I had like 15 names for this last spot.
Wait, we're going to end it. We're going to end the show with one choice of one name straight to the outro. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We appreciate you being here. There will be a episode of a slate breakdown on Wednesday night this week for Thursday's games. I will be joined by Drew and Mike, our two other professional gamblers that joined me on Sunday to break down the show. And then next week we'll be doing check ball again. Gibby, who is the last player that you think is going to be on Team USA?
Paul George.
Yes. Actually, I'm going to interrupt this and not make it the outro. Because he broke his leg and the bone went through his shin or whatever, if he wants the spot, it should be his. Thank you, guys. Peace out.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.